All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Vindicta. Today, we're going to do a bit of a different change on our After Action review. Myself and my counterpart, who's part of the Three Amigos, which makes up the Vindicta Solutions training company, we're going to give our own kind of breakdown to the training that we recently had so that we can create a little bit of dialogue. From the dual instructor side, we'll get to show you a little bit of what we see following you and then what we are also seeing as you're coming at us during the combative side of this portion. And from there, we're just going to give a general conversation, let you guys meet Justin. This is the famous Uncle Charlie, Justin Elliott, who is our one of the other guys that's in our company. And yeah, we're just going to see how this unfolds. The reason why we're doing this is because, for one thing, Justin and Davis, the other guy who is part of this company, need to start coming on camera because I'm their boss and I'm telling them to. And the other part of that is because this is part of our ministry and our outgrowth. This is us reaching out to the other young men and other men our age, trying to, you know, show people that there's more you could be doing with your life and, you know, ganging up together sometimes with other fellas and preaching the gospel and doing things that are constructive for the body of Christ. This is what we should be aspiring to do. And this is what God has blessed Justin, Damus, and I to be able to do with this training company. So without further ado, Justin Elliott, hey, brother, thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, bud. Signature phrase there. How's it going, man? It's good to see you.
Yeah, dude. It is raining here in Texas. I believe Noah is trying to have a second visit. Tell people about yourself, what you've done, who you are, and how we got started on this whole crazy training thing.
All right. So let's see. Long story short, I've been in construction for 20 plus years. Been an avid backpacker, thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail in 2013. For those of you who don't know, that trail is 2,186 miles plus or minus, depending on the year. Goes through 14 states from Georgia to Maine. So I have spent some time in the backcountry hiking through the Appalachian Mountains, done some hiking out west. And from then, once I got done with the trail, I kind of needed something else to follow. So I went into the civilian side of training and started taking as many training classes as possible. And as time went on, I went and took I took the first Vindicta Solutions class out at Ready Made Resources in Tellico, Tennessee, and met Doug, and well, we kind of hit it off from there, and well, now I'm sitting here.
Yeah, and don't forget, you did kind of challenge me with a little bit of grappling, so
that may have happened.
That may have happened.
Yeah,
I may be a little bit faster than I look.
Definitely big.
Yeah, you know what? What's interesting is that from a civilian standpoint, when I first met you, I was very surprised and admired the amount of time you had put into training. You know, I think one of the first things I asked you is if you were a veteran or if you were law enforcement, not just because you had the swagger, but because you had the fine basic skills down, which is the thing that you and I hone in the most on when we try to train people. It's not trying to create some Rambo or, you know, something that is beyond the means of the average man. It's trying to hone the basic skills that the average man should have, but typically does not have. And which is one of the things that we like to say separates us from a lot of others. We just try to get you on the basics. So, you know, you had a lot of good things down whenever we first met. Do you think over the periods of all the training that we've been doing
And then now you stepping into a role into an instructorship and being the predisposed bad guy at every single time we do the active shooter training. How has your skills developed?
Well, first off, I appreciate that. Mostly the thing I could say is you got to watch John Wick about 80 times a week. As long as you watching John Wick, all what is there, like five now? You need to watch those about five times a week and you're good. Other than that, no, absolutely. Being in the shoot house, being on the other side, seeing people just like me, civilians, come into that shoot house and the different decisions they make. And just, I mean, obviously the scenarios are super random, but seeing the decisions they make is just a training point right there. It's very interesting to see how different types of people handle the situations, from being super passive to overly aggressive, where they just basically run at you and you just take their guns. But yeah, it's I've learned so much in the last, what are we going on, a year now. It puts everything in a different perspective.
So in terms of training, why is training in combative skills like jiu-jitsu? You and I both do jiu-jitsu, or I used to, or should I say you and I used to do jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
From grappling, martial arts to firearms to the extreme long range camping that you do, the hiking. I mean, you've informed me about a lot of stuff that I didn't even know of in the terms of ultralight camping, which for me, being stuck in the old military frame of mind, you know, my rucksack is going to be about 60 to 80 pounds, and that's light. And you laughed at me about how heavy that would be. And so it's a unique blend, our skills and our backgrounds, trying to create, I guess we could say, like the perfect American rifleman. Right? Because that's the aiming of our goal here. So in regards to training, like, how important to you is training in for the average American rifleman, the average American man, even woman? We've had a lot of women come to our classes. How important is this kind of training, or just to train in general?
Well, I'd say from a baseline, just have confidence, just to have that level of confidence. Like, the hardest day of jiu-jitsu is the first day, right? It's walking through the doors. It's getting down on that mat for the first time. It's the first time some dude puts his elbow in your, you know, in your throat or whatever, armpit into your mouth. Gross as it sounds, it makes you comfortable in those situations. So yeah, absolutely. I feel the more reps you can get on training, you get this level of confidence that you didn't have before, and you're not going to get anywhere else, whether it's physical training like jiu-jitsu or sambo, wrestling, whatever it is, boxing. And then you throw in the dynamics of a shoot house. It just gives you a confidence that you may not have prior to, you know, doing these things. I mean, if you've never had to, you know, kick in a door and go into a house, which, you know, I've never done, it still gives you, when you stand at that door, I feel like you're going to go, I've done this before in a way. These are the things I need to do. Let's focus on this. Stick to the basics. Let's go.
What do you mean by stick to the basics? Let's go. Is that because a lot of times we see people be way too hesitant to come through the door, or because sometimes we see people who just think they're Superman and the little rounds, the little plastic BB rounds aren't going to hurt you, so I just gain the whole thing. And that's what we see, right? Yeah. We see people and the pain part of this training, which is minuscule with the airsoft, but it's to let you know you're doing something wrong, right? You need to find cover. You need to get on your sights faster. You need to stop hesitating on the trigger or slapping the trigger and make precise shots. Get on your sights, which, you know, that's one of the problems. We always see people with their pistol down. you know, we have, since we've started the Shoot House, we've seen not only a growth in our training, but in the way people respond to the training. A lot of times people show up, and Justin, chime in at any point, they show up and they have almost no baseline. And by that second day, they've created a baseline because we've gone through what, hundreds of repetitions, like just within that day. I mean, you come to train with us, you're not getting a 9 to 5. You're not getting a 4-hour training. I mean, you're getting from like 9 in the morning to like 10 at night. We are training because there's a difference in being fresh in training and being tired in training, and then also being tired in training at night. These are all things that you are going to have to deal with. At night, you're going to be tired. If you don't know what the heck you're doing, you're going to be a world of hurt. And during the day, you're going to be tired. Coming home from work, you don't think something bad can't happen. During the morning, when you're fresh and, you know, out of the bed, you don't think something bad can happen. I can show you video after video and police report after police report of your door getting kicked in or people getting to physical confrontations at all scopes of time during the day and during weather. Weather does not matter. Rain, sleet, snow, thunderstorm, hurricane, apocalypse, whatever. People are always going to take advantage of someone who's not ready.
Yeah. I mean, there's, at this point, I would say, what, 80% of the days we're working 12, 13, 14 hours. We're working until the students are like, we can tell they're absolutely just done.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the coolest things that we do is we're pushing ourselves. I mean, we're going to bed at 3, getting up at 7 on average. And that's usually 3-4 days straight for us. And I mean, we're training. If we're awake and not eating, we're training. Or we're talking about training. Or we're talking about God.
Yep. Yeah, the fellowship, that's I think that's one of the things that separates us from a lot of people, is that we do our best to fellowship because we're all Christians here. So, you know, we've had people who come to the class who are not Christians, who get ministered to by us, and praise God that those people can come. You know, may the Lord be able to make more way for more people. The goal when I started this whole thing out was God said that you were going to bring the young man back to me. Remember when I told you that? That was his mission for me. You're going to bring the young men back to me. And I had absolutely no idea how I was going to do that. So God just led me onto using what I already know. And that's how we're here, where we're at now. And so the fellowshipping part has been one of the biggest amounts of grace for myself, for you. We've gotten closer to our Lord with all, every time we do this training, to Damus. There was times where me and Damus were up till 3 or 4 in the morning, and I'm over here pontificating in a cot laying next to him. We're both trying to go to sleep, but you know, we're so excited to talk about Christ and to talk about the things that have happened in our lives, the people that we've been able to meet. And we're just sitting here chatting it up. So, you know, there's no yelling at our course. Justin and I don't think we've ever yelled at anybody. There's no denigrating. We're not swearing at students. You know, we are doing our best to uphold a certain image. And of course, you know, I'll take the first blame. I am not the world's greatest Christian, but we do our best to raise that standard and raise that bar so that when other men come to meet us and see us, they can see that there is a higher level than where I am right now. Should I choose to go up, you know, and not to say we're on some, you know, sparkling pedestal, but for a lot of men who come to this training, they come seeking fellowship, brotherhood. And you and I have had these conversations with a lot of guys that are just beginning in their faith. Yep. They feel alone. They don't have a good direction to turn to, and they're looking for men of God that they can, I don't want to say follow in the wake, but you know, that they can get instruction from, because you and I came from bad paths and we made it out because of Christ. Amen. And so Amen. Other men see that and they gravitate to that. And that's really what we're trying to do here. You know, it's not a revival. I'll baptize anybody in a cold creek if they want. But, you know, it's what we're doing is we're trying to bring the men that are down into the trenches, the rough and tumbled guys who a lot of times they feel like, you know, I don't need to be here. I don't need to talk about God. I don't need to talk about my emotions, my feelings. And that's the wrong mindset. And the other part of that is that, well, if you're a Christian, you're weak. You're weak, you're pathetic, you're a pacifist. Come to our class. You will see the absolute opposite of that. And I think, Justin, that's one of the things that we actually do best in this entire thing that we do now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no better place for young men to come and realize that Christianity isn't for weak men. It's for the strong men.
Yep.
And we like to show that. And that's not building us up in a way. It's just showing that there's a way to be strong and still follow Christ in a way that I don't think has been portrayed through the modern church.
Yeah. I think a lot of it gets lost in the lights and then the suits and the fancy cars and the pulpits and the million man, you know, churches. There's not a lot of individuality there, and people do get lost in it's almost like a wrongness to me with a lot of these churches. And I, you know, Justin and Damus and I, we laugh and we say that our church is the shoot house. And you'll get preached at, shot at, you know, you'll get chased, you'll chase people. I mean, it's some of the best places to come to for men seeking direction, you know. And we've had a lot of women come to our class. Why do you think that is now?
I don't know, man. It is interesting. I mean, you follow other trainers or whatever online and you don't see a lot of women. And honestly, I don't know exactly why. I mean, I hope it's the environment we're putting on. The non-bro environment, I guess, where it's just like, you know, we're all high speed dudes. Yeah, family friendly, I guess that's a good way to put it. Yeah, bring your kids, bring your wife.
Yeah, we've had a lot of family units come in. You've brought your two nephews in there before. You know, I had my son in there in Texas. So, you know, and here's the thing, when you think about it, like, do you not think being in your house with your kids, you're not going to have to do something with them? That you're not potentially going to have to fight over them, around them, you know, run through people to get to them? The thing that we can do is that we can more or less build a training environment and scenario based upon your needs and bring it to you. Right. That's the thing. Yep. And the entire shoot house, though originally it was my idea, it was a crap idea. And Justin took it and turned it into the monster that it is now. The shoot house, I think we've almost perfected it. I think we're close to perfecting it.
Yeah. We just need a few more rooms. And I mean, in the last class, we had 5 rooms.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've grown a lot in the few months, for sure.
Yeah, 5 rooms. You know, the goal is to be able to give a scenario environment where you have a house that's almost like a standard house with an outbuilding. We're using vehicles as props. We use smoke as props. We're going to be picking up some new simulation rifles here soon. That'll be really fun for you guys who like to cheat in the shoot house. We'll know who got shot soon. but from what we're gathering is that it's less painful than the airsoft. So that's actually sweet. Because Justin and I get black and blued at these classes. Well, now it's Justin. Now it's not me, but typically if I get shot, it's because Justin shot me now.
So every time, actually, it's tradition now for me to shoot you at least once.
I got shot at least 3 times last time.
Well,
that's why I got to wear a light around my neck. So, you know, don't shoot at the light. So let's move on. Let's talk about how dangerous the world's become. The reality of the average man needing this training has increased by how much you think now? I mean, let's look at the protests and lockdowns. Look at what happened with all the political environments, especially right now. Look at what's going on right now. Around the world, we have multiple wars, rumors of wars, North Korea saying they're going to annihilate the United States. Hey, you know what? Don't laugh at that man. He's crazy enough to do it. And China and Russia and Iran are crazy enough to give that little fat man whatever he needs to do it. So yeah,
he's one drink of vodka away from launching a nuke. I mean,
yeah, he's
a bad alcoholic. Yeah.
He's unstable, mentally unstable. Yeah. I'm surprised he's not dead yet. But, you know, better the devil, you know, because right now we can control Kim Jong-un a little bit. But, you know, the way things are going, especially now, you know, American military forces have just blown up 3 Houthi rebel naval craft. And now Iran is going to be floating one of their, I think, destroyers into that same outlet of the ocean. So we can see on the horizon of 2024 with the elections, you know, whatever plandemic wise may happen, we can see the future's unstable. The future's unstable. The economy's unstable. Crime's getting worse. Active shooters have not dropped in their frequency. They've only increased every single year. I've proven that to you how many times. They've only increased every single year. And so, you know, with this unstable future, is the average American man who's not training really behind on the curveball? Or are we just overrated? Or are we just, you know, conspiracy theorists who are, you know, crazy? Or what do you make it right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the world's falling apart as we speak. I mean, it's every single day. It's something else. I mean, it's, you don't skip, you don't get a 24-hour break. If it's not Iran doing something, Israel doing something, I mean, everything's still going on in Russia in case everyone forgot. And then you got this Epstein stuff coming out today. Whatever that is. And we're in an election year, officially. I mean, the fabric of our nation is not what it used to be. People are becoming more violent. People are becoming less tolerable to other people. And I don't mean that in a woke sense. I mean it as if you honk your horn at someone, it might end up in your death. I mean, this isn't the America we grew up in. And this isn't definitely the America our fathers grew up in. I mean, everything's changed. And if you can't see it, then I don't know what you're looking at, to be honest.
Yeah, the fabric of our reality is fringing, to say the least. And the love for many has waxed cold. You know, what we see with an intolerable people is people are so intolerable that they're unempathetic towards each other. How many times does it come across in your news feed on your phone for your local news? You know, mother and 4 kids, you know, killed in a T-bone accident or slain in their house by a murderer or something horrific, and you just go, nah, wonder what's on YouTube. We are out of touch with reality. We're out of touch with it because mm-hmm. most people, they don't live by the sword, die by the sword, carry the sword every day. And I know what the Bible has to say about that. However, It does not mean that the sword went away. It does not mean that the violence went away. It did not mean that bad people aren't going to still try to commit bad acts upon good people or innocent people. So the need for men and women, family units, to be prepared has never been so high in America. We are in a more dangerous state right now in America than I believe we were when the founding fathers were fighting Great Britain. Obviously, there was war here in America. But what we didn't have then compared to what we have now is a legal system and laws made by the lawless, by people who do not support the law, unless it's their version of the law. We have an entire government that is set up now to take down the will of we the people, instead of being influenced and controlled and steered and guided by we the people. The elections mean nothing anymore. Your politicians mean nothing anymore. They are just empty suits collecting multi-hundred-thousand-dollar paychecks. And from there, they all become millionaires. I wonder how that happens. Now, four or five good politicians does not save America. It doesn't make you safer. It doesn't make your house better. It doesn't make your income better. You all will have to pay taxes this year one way or another, right? And continue to skip them and push them down the road. And eventually the IRS will come for you as well. But it will never get turned on them. It'll never get turned on them. Hunter Biden owes what? I think it was like $3 or $4 million of taxes. Al Sharpton, what was it, a couple years ago, owed $11 million in taxes. You think the IRS is really going to come and get it from them? Most likely not. I mean, these are the people who can get away literally with almost anything. Almost anything. And should you do the right thing, like that poor guy in California, defend your home and have to use a firearm for self-defense, then the state of California takes your right to Second Amendment away, which I think it implements today. California is more or less trying to completely take away the Second Amendment from their state. So you have people fleeing these pro-communism states now. And the places that were once safe and not so crowded are now becoming crowded and not so safe.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look at it, Justin, danger is only going to continue and it's only going to grow. And men have to be better at being protectors. We're more than conquerors. We're protectors. We're defenders. We're not Alexander. We're more than that. How do you become more than Alexander? You become the defender. You lay down your life for your brothers, for your friends, for your family. And you do it for Christ, for the right reasons. And this is some of the things that we try to instill in our training. Before we go on to watching a little bit of the training, you got anything else you want to say?
Yeah, the family unit, right? Well, you were talking about the training with the family unit, right? You can go to this training with your boys. I mean, why not? Bring them out. We'd love to meet them. You can go out there with your five guys that you hang out with once a weekend. You know, you guys do cool stuff together out in the backyard, dinging steel or whatever. Bring your wife. Bring your wife, because that's who you're going to be with when something goes down. That's the odds. And I mean, this training is designed. I mean, we work as teams. So you will actually get to work with your wife, your loved one, your dad, your mom. We've had countless family groups at this point, and they get to work together in a scenario that bases off of the real life, right? You're not going to get that even at your house. You even setting it up, you bring your training home to your wife and show her it absolutely, she's going to get something from it. But if you can come out and train as a family unit, especially if you've got older kids, anything like that, I mean, I find the value in that to be priceless, really.
Real quick, while I get this video set up, let's talk about gear. People ask us all the time what kind of gear we have. The last class, everybody had to come and, you know, pick up our gear, our weapons, our plate carriers, our helmets, all the stuff that we're running. Real quick, let people know, what kind of gear do you run and that you think people should be carrying and not wasting a lot of money on? What do you think just the priorities of that should be?
I mean, first thing I would go for is a duty belt, some kind of rigid belt that you can put a holster and a couple mag pouches on. Because that's simple. You can be in it for less than $250. I mean, if you go Safari Land, you might be, you know, $250 in on just the holster, but there's plenty of good holster companies out there. A good solid belt, some mag pouches, and a good holster would be my number one recommendation, because you can throw that on. You could keep that next to your bed. You can throw it on and be clear in your house in 30 seconds. You mean you go from there? Are you going to keep a plate carrier next to your bed? I mean, some people will, but I'm not. I don't have room for that next to my bed. Do I want to kick it over and have the vacuum run into it every time? No. So I'll keep the belt. It's gear is almost a rabbit hole in a way, isn't it, Doug? It's like there's so many different things, but yeah, as a civilian, and if I could choose one thing, I'd have my belt.
Yeah, that's what I have. I always have my belt. It's always got my pistol in it. I don't keep my pistol loaded just because I have kids in the house, but there's a magazine inserted. They don't know how to get my pistol out of my holster because it's a level 3 retention holster. But from there, I mean, you know, my kids also handle weapons a lot. They know, ever since I was a cop, every time I'd come home, you know, my girls would take either the shotgun or the rifle or the ballistic shield or my vest or my duty belt. And I got them used to it. So it's not like a thing that they have to go and explore. Ooh, I've never played with this before. My kids play with unloaded guns all the time, unloaded guns, right? Yeah. And I let my kids train with the airsoft training weapons as well. So I get that need to want to pick up daddy's guns out of them. But also I don't keep around loaded, just cause I can tell you horror stories that will make you cry. Listen about how guys are spending time in prison right now because of negligence and their, you know, their child is dead. So I don't think the millisecond it takes to rack a round into your pistol is worth keeping the round in the pistol. But that's just me. But yeah, I keep 3 magazines on my belt, 1 of the guns. So that's 4 mags. And that may seem excessive to people. Come train with us. See how many times your magazine is going to mess up, right? Either a new magazine or a round, your gun's not clean, your gun gets jammed up. I mean, and just Murphy's Law. If something bad can happen, it's going to happen to you right when you don't need it to happen. So, you know, keeping spare magazines doesn't weigh a lot. You know, let's talk about communication and radios real quick. Everybody's all jammed up, satellite phones, ham radio. Me personally, yeah, I got the ham radio right here. Me personally, a simple, basic walkie-talkie between you and your wife and maybe a few others that you can hand out is where you should start off with. Do you disagree with that?
No. Get Baofengs. Just buy 10 Baofengs and hand them out to the people that you want to communicate with. I mean, that right there, it's going to run you. I mean, they've gone up in price. So off the top of my head, I want to say 10 Baofengs would run you like $500-$700 at this point. But I mean, that's 10 people you can hand radios to. You can buy 2 radios right now for about $80 with extended antennas, extended batteries, all that, and you're set up. I mean, out here on the property, you know, we can go across the property with you know, Dad keeps a Baofeng, I keep a Baofeng. And if for some reason we can't get each other on the phones, hit that radio up and there you go. It's such a simple and cheap way to fill that gap. Does it fill the gap completely? No. It fills 10% of the gap, but it's better than nothing. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, even the ability, you know, if you and I are driving down the road and we have to skedaddle, we got our families with us, we're probably not going to be on our phones. Talking on the radio is how it's going to happen. You know, if we got to stop, clear something because there's an obstruction on the road, or, you know, maybe get out and scout out a little bit. Do you want to have your phone in your hand, or you want to be able to use a radio with a headset? You know, this is where people need to start thinking. They need to think about what is actually responsible to own and not foolish. Is another AR-15, when I already have 20 of them, really what I need? I know guys who are like, yeah, just bought me another AR-15 lower, going to build me another one. You got a radio? No. Do you got a helmet? No. Do you got plates? Oh, yeah, I got AR-500 plates. Good luck lugging that around, Terminator. Enjoy that weight. Like, you're going to learn that being light, being fast, having endurance, and good quality gear is really what's going to keep you in the fight for the longest amount of time as possible, and also get you to the fight and get you away from the fight. If you have a bunch of crap gear that you bought from Walmart, your Uncle Mike's gear, and crap that you bought off Amazon, and some stuff in Amazon is good, all right, but I'm a name brand kind of guy. You know, it's you buy the good stuff one time, and typically, unless you're just working the heck out of it, it's not going to break on you.
Yeah.
But we have people who will show up with all kinds of random pieces of kit and gear, and we see almost the same stuff all the time. Condor, knockoff stuff from China. And I know it's cheap, but single thread straps with just one little thread of stitching is going to rip the first time you got to get yanked out of a house because you got shot. Like, if someone had to pull on that strap and drag you out and it rips, you know, you got to, people don't think about these things, Justin, because they've never been put in the situation. They don't think about ultralight camping until they walk over 2,000 miles, right? So, yeah. Real quick, just on that part, I think the basic mountaineering shoes, like what you and I wear, that's about the best you can get for shoes, right?
Yeah, trail runners.
Yeah, trail runners. I got Salomons. I wear Oboz, O-B-O-Z. Those are made in Missoula, Montana. There's a bunch of good companies. What shoes are you running mainly? Is it Salomons?
Salomons for life, man. Yeah. I think I've got like 20 dead pairs in the garage. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the same as me. I don't throw mine away.
No.
Yeah. No. I just replace the soles in them. I don't throw them away. So from there, good pants, good quality pants. I think, honestly, I know I say, you know, buy good name brand stuff, but when it comes to pants, because I want something, me personally, I've done this for 15 years. I've worn heavy fireproof uniforms, which suck. I've worn the light uniforms. I've worn Cry Precision uniforms. I've worn the 511 tack pants. And I've eventually drifted to where I'm wearing like the lightest Magellan stretchy pants as possible. I know it's funny, but when you have to kneel for long periods of time, when you got to crawl, kneel, like, I don't want pockets on the side of my pants. I hate anything being against my legs. I don't wear a drop holster or anything. I want my legs completely clear of everything. But that's experience has taught me that I want mobility more than I want to look cool. So what say you on pants? Where are you at right now on your tactical pants journey?
Tactical pants journey? Man, I don't know. I have not nailed anything down specific yet. I mean, I actually don't mind the 5'11 pants. They're reasonably priced. I mean, I've put them through, well, 5 or 6 training courses now, and they've held up. Not so much the Vertex pants. Yeah. You know, they're the OR, Outdoor Research. I sent you some of those pants the other day, I think. That's probably where I'm going, because OR has been one of the best brands, I think, as far as backpacking gear. They're definitely in the backpacking area. So OR is probably my next step.
Yeah, we used to get issued a lot of stuff from Outdoor Research. Their gloves, their thermals, their layering. So that's some of the best stuff that you can get. Yeah, I mean, like the way that I believe people should be dressing. And it's not that I'm against uniforms and camouflage, though I kind of am. The reason why I say it's better just to go with solid color clothing that's earth tone is because, for one, it'll help you blend into multiple environments. And unless you plan on ghillie suit crawling through the woods all day, you are probably going to be around people. Right? You're going to be around people. So do you want to look like you belong to law enforcement or the military in your average day by day, you know, clothing? You see those guys, they'll walk through, you know, the store, and they'll have the multicam pants on, or they'll have the military colored pants on, and they stand out like a sore thumb.
Oh, and every time.
Most of the time, they look like an Elmer Fudd walking through the store. So you see those people, like the whole gray band thought process is that when you're in public, you should just be a shadow in someone's memory, right? When it's time to kick the tires and light the fires, though, does it really matter what you're wearing? No, not really. But still, if we're talking about now we're playing in enemy territory, China's invaded, Russia's invaded, Biden has unleashed the troops upon the American populace, whatever, you know, doomsday apocalypse scenario that you're thinking of, you don't want to look like an attractive target to somebody, right? Yeah. Because you don't want to look like, you know, oh, there's a guy who knows a lot. He's wearing, you know, camouflage pants and a camouflage shirt. Let's go talk to him, right? Because you will get questioned for that. You may not think it. A lot of these guys who show up at these protests and riots, they feel it. They see it. So for me, I wear, you know, dark colored clothing, browns, tans, at times tans, greens, and black clothing. And that's pretty much, you know, maybe an extra flare of a shirt. And that's basically what I've dwindled my entire wardrobe down to. I want clothing that's not going to be resistant upon movement. I don't starch anything. So all you cowboys out there who, you know, double, triple starch everything for whatever reason, good luck with all that. But, you know, even down to just the basic footwear, like I've completely reshaped my entire frame of mind so that if, you know, prophecy hits the fan at any moment, my average day by day clothing is what I train in. It's what I hike in. It's what I work out in. And it's what I do yard work in and what I wear every day. I know my clothing and I know the bounds that it can go and what it can't do. So that's what we're trying to say right here. You know, for a lot of guys, they buy a lot of this stuff, and we've seen them. They show up with multicam this, they show up with cool guy that, and you ask them, how much do you wear that stuff? Oh, only when I go to train. Are you really training in it though? Are you really pushing that clothing to how far you think you can go? Because people don't understand it, but when you blow out the crotch in your freaking pants and you ain't got no way to stitch it back up, you're going to have problems in a couple days if you have to live in those clothes. I have lived, and Justin and I have lived in the clothes that we wear for weeks at times. You know, obviously 4 or 5 days while we're training, but we've lived in these clothes for a long time before. We know the how far you can push it. So if you ever have any questions about, you know, the type of clothes we wear, because everyone asks us every class, kind of clothes you guys wear? Because we wear almost the identical set of clothes. You know, come and ask us. I've drifted almost completely to Magellan pants now because they're super cheap. And if I rip them up, whatever, I don't care. But they're so light that, you know, the reason why I like them is that they're so light is that they dry very fast. I don't get hot spots in them. I don't sweat in them. And I can move very fast in them. And I can carry multiple. Problem with them is if you get next to fire, they're going to melt to your skin. So know the limitations of your clothing. Plate carrier wise, I know I make fun of your plate carrier every single class.
You do.
So, you know, for those that are interested, plate carrier and helmets. Let's talk about what we wear real quick.
All right. So my plate carrier is a Velocity Systems Mayflower. And I guess it's old school because the front still flips up. Is that what it is? And you have to hook the cummerbund through. But it is still a good brand. I mean, I paid good money for it. It's held up well. It's held up really well, actually. It supports plates well. And the one thing I do like about it is it still has the back molly for the Haley backpack. So that's a big thing. That's why I haven't switched yet.
Yeah.
Helmets.
Go ahead. What helmet are you talking?
Team Wendy. Good solid helmet. It's a bump helmet. So I don't have that. I don't have that Gucci ballistic helmet money, but I do have a nice set of duals on there. So there is that. Right.
Yeah. You know, I wear a Spiritus Systems plate carrier. I like it because it's fairly cheap. It's high quality. I used them the entire times I was in the riots in Portland. So I tested that from summer to winter, snow and rain and everything that you can think of. So I know that plate carrier and its systems work perfectly. The front pouch that I wear is simple Haley Strategic Micro. I do wear the Dangler medical pouch just because you got to think, like, if you're hurt, you want all your medical right there on your stomach for the most part so that both hands can get to it and your face can see it. I'm a bigger guy, so reaching around to my backside of my belt trying to grab anything medical related is just not a go for me. I don't have that type of dexterity and flexibility anymore. But not only that, if something does happen to you and you're hurt, if you can't do self-aid and you require buddy aid, well, your medical's right there on your stomach and, you know, your body makes a perfect platform already. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I always run my medical right there, but I run multiple medical in multiple pouches just because backups, right?
Yeah, I think the front of our carriers are basically the same, aren't they? Because we both run a micro and a dangler. And yeah. I run medical on my belt, too.
Yeah, I mean, like, eventually, when you start to wear your gear enough, you realize a very simple system that your belt, your first line gear, your belt should probably only have your holster, maybe a knife, maybe a spare pouch for whatever. And then the magazines, you know, for your pistol. And I keep one spare mag for, I think you and I both keep one spare mag for our AR. After that, everything is on the vest. All right. So all the extra magazines are on our vest on our chest. The micro from Haley Strategic is honestly, I think, the most superior currently chest rig that's out there. It's simple. I've worn it for years. It works. And I mean, like when I say I've worn it, I've worn almost all Haley Strategic stuff. I do have some Spiritus chest rigs. They work very well, but they're very minimalist. For me, I like an extra zipper pouch here and there just to put extra stuff in.
Yeah. Well, the Haley pouch really doubles as like an admin pouch too.
Absolutely.
Which is really nice.
Yeah. I mean, you don't realize the type of stuff. I mean, if you think about it, if you had to go on what we call a long walk for 5, 6, 7 hours a day, what is on your body is all that's on your body. That's all you're carrying. And a backpack is good to have, but that weight upon your shoulders plus the sling of the rifle is going to wear you down. And if it wears you down, it burns down calories. It's going to burn out your endurance. You're going to get irritable. You're going to miss things. You're going to need to hydrate more. I mean, like, people don't understand that there is a physiology here that involves having crappy gear and good gear and too much weight. You know, you carry what you need for the mission and then extra for in case things go bad. But it doesn't mean you carry everything in your tactical closet either.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing that people get wrong, I think, and I'm speaking more of, I guess, in the civilian backpacking way, is that they want to carry everything that they can, that they think they'll need. Well, the problem with that is as that pack gets heavier, that's the more calories you burn, which means you need to carry more food. So as you keep adding weight to your pack, you're actually needing to technically add more food weight at the same time. And it just gets, it's a never ending cycle. You carry what you need and the rest of it, you fill up with food. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of survival shelter, are you carrying poncho liner, tarp, basic, lightweight tent, bivy sack, or are you carrying like some of the standard heavy stuff that people carry?
So if I guess if I was to bug out, and I was to grab anything as a shelter, I would actually just grab the tent that I thru-hiked with, because it's 1 pound, 13 ounces. I can fit two people and gear inside that tent. And I've slept in it in 22 inches of snow. I've slept in it in winds that it probably wasn't rated for. And I've been in multiple thunderstorms where that thing should have been ripped off the ground and it didn't. That tent has got me through so many things. But I'll say I also paid, what is it, 2024 now? So that tent is now 11 years old. I paid almost $800 for that tent. And I've probably slept a year's worth of nights in that tent, to be honest. So that goes back to the buy once, cry once. Like, spend the money.
What brand tent is that?
It's actually a Big Agnes. It's a Big Agnes Fly Creek 2 Platinum. They don't make that tent anymore. They make something like it. And I think they make it out of Cuban fiber now, which is even lighter.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about outfitting the standard American rifleman, you know, even back in the colonial times, it was your haversack, your bedroll, you know, the stuff that you cooked on, spare set of clothes or a spare jacket, because they didn't have a lot of clothes back then. And then from there, it was your weapons.
Yeah.
You know, you slept on the ground and you slept very sparse, maybe a wool blanket. Other than that, they didn't have a lot. So, you know, if we had to go on one of these, you know, extreme long walks, what we have is it. And nowadays, you know, I mean, we're rocking 6-7 magazines, plus a rifle, plus a helmet, plus night vision, thermals, the water, the food, you know, whatever, you know, accoutrements you decide to also add on to your kit. And then your bedding, then your spare clothes, then your medical, you know, special tools, possibly. I always keep tools on me. You know, I keep a very simple, basic set of tools on me, Phillips, flathead, some kind of a wrench or pliers, wire cutters, snippers, just a very small, basic set, just in case I ever need it, right? Yeah. And it just is thrown in the backpack and I forget about it. But, you know, that stuff over a period of time will break your body down. And if you're not in shape, it will drastically break your body down.
Yeah.
right?
I your knees will give out a lot sooner than you think.
Yeah, think about the walk that you did. But think, what was the, how many miles would you do average on the Appalachian Trail?
Well, let's back it up a little bit, because this story actually plays into it, and it's short and sweet. So prior to going on the Appalachian Trail, Jesus, can't speak. So I live right at the base of the Smokies. So in order to train, I say train for this hike, I would go do 60-mile weekends in the Smokies with whatever elevation change, whatever, it didn't matter. I'd run up and down those mountains, averaging about 20 miles a day. Pack weight, first day, probably 22 pounds. By the end, it was about 16 pounds. That's winter or summer, really. Summer is probably lighter. And when I started that trail, when I went down March 1st to Springer Mountain, Georgia, to get on the trail, my plan was out of the gate to hit 18s to 20s right out of the gate, all the way to Maine. And what happened was I didn't think about that. I had been training 3 days in a row and then going home and resting. Now, I was still going to work Monday, but I wasn't walking 20 miles. Even being in the construction site, you ain't walking 20 miles a day. You know, you up and down the ladders, carrying boxes, carrying lumber, whatever. What happened was after the fifth, sixth, seventh day, my knees started to swell up. And I'm like, what's going on? I trained for this. Like, I've been training a year and a half for this. Well, what, I wasn't resting. My body was used to hammering down 3 days, 60 miles in 3 days. And, but when I did, when I tried to do, you know, 200 miles in a week, 100 miles in a week, my knees were like, no, you're not going to do it, man. And they quadrupled in size. And my knees were the size of a softball until I got to Maine. And thank God for ibuprofen, because I may not have made it there.
Yeah, I mean, that's, those are the common things that you're going to see in combat too. Like, I broke my ankle in Iraq, didn't really know I had broken it. And so I hurt it very, very badly, probably like month two or three into our first deployment. And all we did was ace bandage, wrap it up. I think I was on radio watch for like a week, and then I was back into it, screwed up ankle and all, for the next, like, you know, 6 to 7 months. And you know, jumping waddies and running and doing all that stupid stuff. So the injuries that you get, unless you can provide aid somewhere, unless you can be provided aid or you have rest, you're going to have to deal with. And a lot of weight is going to wear you down. It's going to make everything hurt. And I was a saw gunner. Like, I was about like 350 pounds, I would say, in full gear. All right. It was a tremendous amount of gear that I carried. We all carried a lot of gear. And so, you know, and those were, you know, we were only, you know, walking around for 5 to sometimes 6 to 8 hours. Well, we could walk right back to the FOB. If you had to walk from your house to your bug out location, like, what are you going to carry? What all are you going to carry? Can you carry it? Parents, if you got kids, you're going to have to carry all your cool guy gear, and you better expect to carry your kids too. That's why we stress, like, weight training is highly recommended. The world alone is going to beat you up. Your gear is going to beat you up. And then you got to get into a fight. So you're already tired, dehydrated, and hungry, most likely by the time you get into that fight. And if you're not ready for that mentally, physically, spiritually, man, you're going to be in a world of hurt. And everyone else around you, that's why Justin and I and Justin Damus and I, we talk about, are you an asset or are you a liability? And being that liability means, guys, I'm going to poke fun at you real quick. If you tell me that you and your brothers are all prepared because you all got ARs, you know who I'm talking about, because you got ARs and you know how to fly a drone, and you know, you got a bunch of bullets, you're prepared for the worst to happen, right? I don't know if you want to share this story that we've been talking about, but it's hilarious to me where you have the average man thinks that he's prepared just because he owns a gun.
Not sure what to do with my hands. Is that... okay, so we won't go into too many details, but yeah, it's that mindset, right? It's the mindset that I own a gun. I own 100 guns. I own all the ammo in the East Tennessee or Texas or whatever, that I'm going to be fine. And that's first off where your problem is. And another one thing, if you are in the bug out bag team, right? You plan on throwing this backpack on and you're going to go to your secret roost up in the mountains and you're going to go up there and that's where you're going to survive it. Put that backpack on and walk to the end of your driveway. If you can do that, walk around your house a few times. If you can do that, take it up into the mountains. Go find somewhere. I mean, even if you live in Florida, I don't know. You have to go walk on some sand flat somewhere. But take that backpack out and walk in it with that weight in it, because 20 minutes in that backpack is doable. Maybe even an hour. Go 8, 9, 10 hours, go to sleep, and then wake up the next day and do it again. And then add the rain on top of it. What happens when that pack gets wet and half the stuff in it is wet? I can't tell you how many times through hiking where every single piece of my gear was wet except for my sleeping bag and how much weight that added. These are all the things you have to think about. And if you're carrying this, you know, military style gear that's not necessarily designed to be lightweight, it's designed to be durable, which in a bug out scenario, yeah, you're going to want the durability, but you have to remember that it weighs a lot more. And then you've got your rifle and you have all the ammo that you collected and those 8 million rounds you've got and the 25 Mosin Nagants you got. Sell them. sell all your guns and buy what your family needs to survive and buy gear. Buy good gear and train in the gear. And if you really want, come train with us a little bit, because we like to do that too.
And buy nods.
And buy nods. If you've never put on nods, you're missing out.
Which is night vision for those of you who don't know.
Yeah. MVGs, nods, super cool guy tubes. I don't know what are the alien vision.
The green-eyed monsters.
The green-eyed monsters. I think that's the white-eyed monsters now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many more things to just having guns. And I mean, you might as well have all the ammo. I can't say you shouldn't have all the ammo, but having 45 guns is, I don't know, a little overkill, I guess.
Yeah, I think being purpose-driven, purpose-built, purpose-driven, right? After that, you're just collecting stuff to collect stuff. Like, I only have a few rifles. I only have a few pistols. I have very expensive rifles and pistols, but I chose high quality over, like with my one pistol, I could probably buy 3 Glocks with it, right? But I got a hammer of a pistol. And not only do I just specifically love it, because, yeah, it does look cool, of course, as part of the fight, but I know the quality that it was made, right? Same thing with my rifle. Same thing with my precision rifle, my SMG. You know, and then that's it. Everything else is just, you know, the stuff my family's passed down with hunting guns, you know, the basic shotguns and rifles. And those are great things. You can still utilize those. And if worst case scenario, if I need them, sure, I can use them. But I just don't see the point in owning 20, 30 rifles and you don't train in them. You don't have body armor. You don't know medical training. You don't have radio training. You're out of shape. You've never been in a fist fight before. Don't kid yourself when you tell everybody that you have either. You know, you don't know what to do when an actual problem, which is people, produces itself in front of you. You're going to hesitate. You're going to make a mistake. and it may be something that you are going to regret for the rest of your life, or that may be the story of the end of your life. Like that's what it means to be an asset or a liability, right? I mean, some people don't understand it. Like if you have multiple children like I do, how much food am I carrying and water am I carrying? How much clothes am I carrying? A lot, like a lot. There's a lot of cool guy gear that I'm going to have to just say, you know what? The pack that has all my kids stuff in it means more than my cool guy stuff. And I'm just going to have to separate from that. Or I'm going to have to put it on and take the weight and just man up that pain, right? Ounces equal pounds, pounds equals pain. Is that right, Justin?
Absolutely. But in the backpacking world, it's grams equals ounces.
I can't even fathom that. You know, the stuff that we had in the military was designed to get us to the fight and to meet the basic need that the military had. It, just because it's military grade, does not make it good. Most of the time, it makes it crap, actually.
Well, it's like the lowest bidder, right?
It is. Absolute lowest bidder.
Yeah.
All right, so let's do a little review real quick on this training.
Yeah, while you're pulling that up, I'm going to finish one thing off with this gear thing, right? Don't get caught up in having everything. Start small, start simple. Have a rifle, have a pistol. Have a rifle, have a pistol for your wife. Know how to use it. Everybody should have a backpack. The kids should have a backpack. Radios, you know, you go to the Baofengs like we were talking about earlier. Simple. But don't initially get so overwhelmed with all this gear that it's like, oh, I'm going to need 20 grand just to get started. You don't. You can get started in being prepared for fractions of your paycheck every week.
Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't take a lot. Like, you know, I have what people call Gucci gear, but you know, thank you Antifa for buying that for me. But I saved up a lot to buy the stuff that I had because the stuff I was wearing was just, you know, what was given to me. And when I went from level 4 ESAPI hard plates, which I wore extra large plates, so I'm probably, I don't know, 20 pounds plus soft armor, 20 pounds in weight of armor, to these ultralights, world's difference. Absolute world's difference. So you got to be thinking about, like, and this was back during the riots when I was running every day or on my feet all the time, you know, that weight wore you down. And I mean hard. And, you know, in multiple days of sustained operations, when we were doing sometimes every day was a mandatory 12 hours. Typically it was 12 to 18 hour days, sometimes 20 hour days, sometimes 24 hour days. And then you're expected to wake right back up and be there the next day. And this did not end. It never ended. As we were rotating in and out of the operation, you were just expected to be there for months, only getting a few hours of sleep every night. So, you know, that changed my perspective really on why I wanted to be as light as possible. So let's do a quick review of what we did with this training. And, we're not here to make fun of anybody or anything like that, but we just want to get people in the mindset of what we're looking at, in regards to training and possibly why you should, you know, take our training or at least some form of training. I don't care. You can come see me and Justin and Damus. You can go anywhere else. Just get some sort of relevance of training.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're going to talk about the training a little bit, what Justin and I see, and, you know, we'll give out some pointers here and there. So first off, coming right through the door, like for this scenario in the shoot house, how we had it set up, you had this long hallway. As soon as you come through that front door, presented with multiple targets, you can see right here. presented with multiple targets, you know, coming right into that room, the first thing that you should be looking for are those corners, the most available corners that you're seeing. And then from there, as you can see, you have this long wall to your left. So you can see all the way down this room. Now you know there's multiple rooms, right? And you can see the corner to your right. That's that hard cut corner. And we want to pie our way through that door or pan our way through that door. And then we're doing kind of a turkey peek coming through there. There's I can't remember what company it was that's training people more or less how to die. But they do this like multiple weird turkey peek jerky motions. Look, we're talking about being slow and surreptitious with your searches. Unless there's a threat that makes you have to hurry and move fast, take your time. You know, coming through a house, take your time, especially because the scenario that we had created is always, this is your house, right? You know the rooms, you know the layout, it's your house. Because that's what we're doing this for, you know, community and family preparedness. So coming straight around this corner, Justin, people being presented with this open room, this is where they always paused at, right? It was right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, learn the basics of CQB, positive identification.
And that's really, I mean, that's really where it comes into too, is when you come around that corner and you initially see even these paper targets, there's so much information you got to pick up off these targets. I don't know if you can pause that where we can kind of get it. So if you can see the guy with the face tats on the left, he's actually holding a camera. And if you were just to blaze through there, you know, these are what, the T-Rex arms. I can't remember what they call chameleon them. They're targets. Nice. They're, yeah, chameleon. They're awesome targets because they do things like that. They give you guys face tats holding cameras. And obviously, as you see, he saw that that was a camera and moved on. But that's really something to think about in your own home is this a 17-year-old kid that, you know, drank too many 40s and just walked into the wrong house? Do you really want to pump that kid full, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, the situation dictates.
That target got shot by every other student.
Yeah.
And almost no one could explain why they shot it. Well, one person said, well, because he had tattoos, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think it goes without saying, but it's going without saying now, that until the entire world breaks down and there is no law, there is no rule of order, there is no repercussions for what you do, you have to understand that you live in a world where law enforcement is still going to arrive, people are still going to go to jail, and you're still going to be prosecuted for even the good things that you do until you are taken to court and eventually found guilty or innocent, hopefully. Everything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law, to include photographs, witness testimony, people on their dang cell phones. Everything that you do now is being filmed. So when you give commands, you say it loud enough for those people who are filming you, they can hear those commands. And, you know, not only that, but the bad guy can hear the commands clearly. And you are now talking yourself through the scenario. You're not stumbling yourself through it. You know, we dealt with this with officers who were really quiet. They stuttered. And when a threat was presented in front of them, they kind of cowered. Well, if you cower and stumble and stutter and don't speak loud, the bad guy is going to pick up on that. I mean, you do that every single class, don't you? When the students are kind of timid and we want to increase the scenario, we just have Justin, mm-hmm. you know, not play along if you're going to be timid. Go ahead, Justin.
Oh, it's blatantly obvious too. When someone comes in, they can be yelling, you know, with this intense voice, and their body language says otherwise. Like, it's amazing to be on the other side and actually see just how much you put off as whether you're confident or you're just going to be a pushover. And surprisingly enough, it's some of the hardest guys, the guys that you would think would be the hardest come in. And it's like, oh, okay, there's a little bit of a breakdown here. And that's not to be discouraging or negative towards them. It's an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, I think with having this little closet or shower room, whatever it is, we ended up calling it, threw so many people off. But here we go. This is the first scenario where it is actually force on force. And you see the cautiousness right here coming through the door, where he's being cautious, but he's also being very jerky, right? Not really taking his time. So, and situation dictates, right? You're going to hear us say that so much. Is it your house? Is somebody in it? Do you need to get in there? If it's not your house, do you need to get in there? Do you have the legal right to be in someone else's house, by the way, either? If it is your house, someone's in there, but none of your family's in there, do you need to go into that house? Or can you just stand back and be the trained observer and call law enforcement and say, hey, somebody's in my house. This is me. This is what I'm wearing. I got a gun on me. Please send somebody over here and let what the police are paid to do go and do their job. I mean, that's basically end that ends the entire training scenario right there, Justin. Like, that's your options, right?
Yep. I mean, technically, you could do that every round, except you're not going to get very good reps through the house.
Yeah, of course. We push people through here so they can get all these reps, but let's listen to this real quick.
Hey, what are you doing in here? What are you doing in here? This is my house. You are to get out of it. Put that down. Put that down. You put that down. Put it down.
So we don't have conversations with bad guys. We give commands right there. If you guys can hear, Justin is talking with the student in this scenario and he's like, hey man, you know, calm down. I just want some food and water. And the student is trying to give commands, but at the same time, trying to have a conversation. I mean, Justin, what were you thinking as you're seeing all this play out now?
Well, just with any of the scenarios, that's I'm trying to bait you into having a conversation. If you'll talk to me, that gives me more time to plan on what my next move is. And it also gives me more time to read your body language, see what you're going to do, see what moves you're going to make wrong. Gives you time to get in your head and walk towards me or make the wrong decision. And once you make the wrong decision, I kind of like to capitalize on that.
Yeah. I mean, we've had people not speak very clearly. And then we've had people give the most off the wall commands. And what's so interesting that you and I have discovered, and I've known this for a long time, but really for you and I to discover this together has been unique, is how people talk their entire lives. They talk well. They talk eloquently. They can carry on full conversations for days. Put them in a house with a paintball mask on and an airsoft gun and watch people barely be able to speak or communicate properly.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's the intensity. Even these videos don't actually like bring the intensity that some of these scenarios bring. I mean, you can hear, if you listen to the people's voices, I've watched the video, you can hear it in their voices.
Put it down. Turn around. Turn around. This is my house.
Okay. Maintaining control of yourself and of the bad guy. Why is that key?
Well, kind of like what I was saying earlier is like, you're giving me time. If you're giving me time to get in your head and you're getting in your own head, then you've lost the fight already. And that's what I'm doing right here. Just buying time.
Put your hands against that wall.
This one?
Put your hands against that wall. Spread your legs.
Okay. For one thing, if anyone's wondering why I'm laughing, the funniest stuff is to watch Justin. You could tell Justin, put your hands against the wall. We go like, which wall? Wall directly behind you. Oh, this wall? And it's just funny. It's funny to watch you do it because it frustrates people so much when you play dumb. But people do that. People will do that. People will act dumb. They'll be sarcastic. They'll be vulgar towards you. Sometimes they just won't respond. They just won't answer. They'll just stare you down. Right. So you got to know how to handle people in these situations. Has the gun ever told you to do anything in any of these scenarios?
No, most of the time I'm not even worried about the gun unless I can take it.
Yeah. I mean, the people aren't afraid of the gun anymore. They need to be afraid of you. Right. So put the bad guy into a position of disadvantage. Put yourself into a position of dominance. You've heard me say this so many times, and you see me demonstrate it so many times. What does
this felt you demonstrate it?
Why is this key?
Well, the best thing I can think of is we've had maybe 8 or 9 scenarios where I'm role playing, and when those people came in, whoever they be, I knew I mean even as a role player, you know, you feel it too. You can feel the intensity, and there's been people that I knew 100% were going to put me down, and my natural instinct was to comply with them, even though knowing I'm a role player and I'm supposed to be messing with them or dragging it on into some sort of way. I mean, how many times have you said, you know, let's drag this one out far, and I only take it a minute and a half because I'm like, they convinced me. I was convinced that they were going to kill me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of our standard operating procedure here is that Justin, as the role player, is going to continue to confound you and frustrate you, confuse you, and challenge you until you make yourself believable, which there's a few things you're going to that we teach you to do correctly. Finding cover, not getting sucked into the situation, which I'll let you explain that here in a second. You know, using proper commands, having a command presence. If you're not doing these things, Justin is going to continue with the scenario until you get all these skills correct, or at least most of them, and you take control. The whole thing here is to take the control away from the bad guy and put the control back into your hands. Not every situation is going to be a shoot the bad guy situation. We don't train that. We never train that. Unless a weapon is presented to you, there's no reason to kill somebody, right? Because once again, you still live in a world where there are laws and repercussions. I think one of the problems with shoot houses and with some of the other training that's done for in this type of fashion is that you train people to always shoot at paper targets. And yeah, they're learning all the cool guy CQB stuff. But if they don't deal with people who frustrate you, they're not going to know anything else except for my training always tells me failure drill, Mozambique drill, you know, 3 shots to the chest, 2 shots to the face. You got to know way more, like just so you got to have good gear. You got to know medical, you got to know radio, you got to know how to ultralight camp and track. You also need to know how to talk to people. Right, Justin? So
yeah.
Putting people into a position of disadvantage, how important is that in this type of close quarters element?
Absolutely. I mean, it's probably one of the most important things once you get beyond the actual engagement, the initial engagement, because I mean, how many times have I rolled over and grabbed someone, or they get too close, you know, coming in to search me or something, and able to take their gun or pull a hidden gun out or the hidden, you know, blue knife out and take a chunk out of them. Like, it's absolutely probably one of the most important things is to put someone in a position where they cannot move. They don't have the ability to move. And even if they wanted to, they would give you so much lead up to it that you would know that they're about to make some kind of move.
Yeah. The let's talk real quick before we leave, getting sucked into a situation. So what is your best advantage, or let's say, what is your best advice when in these close quarters, high threat environments, what is it that you would focus on? And obviously I want you to explain the whole getting sucked into the situation, but what are these basics that you've learned so far that people should know, and what you would do in these environments?
So coming into the house, first thing I think that you're going to want to do is talk to yourself, calm yourself down. Get yourself into a place that you're comfortable with. Find your pace, I guess you would say it in the backpacking world, and move at that pace. Don't move at a pace that you're uncomfortable with. Go slow, be methodical, especially if you've taken the class, use what you've known, use the angles, do things like that. And then when you do find, you know, whatever the threat is, keep your distance. There's no reason to get closer to that person, that whatever it is, whatever the threat is. Keep the distance. The bullets take up the distance way faster than we can. I mean, even a clunky old junky 45, you know, moving at 900 feet per second, still a lot faster than me. Did I piss the boomers off?
The 1911 is the answer to everything.
Yeah. Yeah, but the bullets are going to take up that space way faster, and I can't move that fast. Neither can anyone else. Now, that doesn't mean they can't get to you. That's that whole 21-foot rule that we you know, pound into people's heads so many times. But that gives you the advantage. If you're 5 feet away, but you could have been 12, you should have been 12. And that goes into the getting sucked into the room. If you get off your pace, I'll say, and you get too caught up in the scenario or in the situation you're in, and you want to just keep moving towards the threat, eventually the threat is going to come to you. And at that point, you don't have any reaction time. And what more do you want? What more would you possibly want than that extra half a second to possibly get on target or make that extra shot or even step out of the room and get out? All those things go out the window when you over penetrate or move too close to the threat.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that we discover quite a bit in law enforcement, which is what makes the job so dang dangerous, is that eventually I have to put my hands on you. I have to detain you or arrest you. And that means eventually I have to either holster my pistol or come within lethal hand-to-hand range of someone else. Outside of that, when you have the tactical advantage to keep your distance, distance is our friend. If you can keep your distance, be tucked into a door frame and just keep your arm between that door frame and you and talk to somebody if they're complying, right? If they're complying, because we show people the difference between a compliant subject and a non-compliant subject, and then just the unknown threat. If they're being compliant, does that mean that I need to be overly friendly and come up and search them? No, it doesn't mean that at all. I can do a cursory search from however far I am away, as long as they'll volunteer and comply with it. But from there, I mean, if we're inside a house and I confront you, how many times have we done this? And I confront you and you take off into another room, am I going to willfully follow you into those rooms, being sucked into a potential ambush? Or am I just going to say, you know what? Not today. And I will tactically withdraw myself out of that house and call in backup. All right. Now, change the scenario. If your loved ones are in the house, okay, now things have changed. You just got to do what you got to do, right? Because we won't leave our family in there with a bad guy in there. But these are things that people need to be trained on, and they're not. That's why they're coming to the training. That's why we have couples coming to the training. We got parents with their kids coming. We have whole family units coming. So we implore you, if you don't have this type of training, if you don't want to come to us, seek it out. Seek it out and take that training. If you don't have good medical training, seek it out. If you don't have basic fundamentals of marksmanship, you don't know how to use your pistol, your rifle, your shotgun, seek out those guys. We're completely phasing out live firearm training, and we're only going to be doing simunition airsoft training, which for us, every time we've done live fire training, we come back and we ask the students, what was more important, training in that house and the scenarios or shooting your bullets on the range? And almost every time people have said the house training and the scenarios was so much more beneficial. Unfortunately, some people will say, well, actually, this was the first time I've ever got to shoot my gun. Right. Yeah. So here's where the errors are developing. Like, before you come and see us, you need to get some basic fundamentals. Right. Because we can challenge you on everything that you've learned. Put it in a scenario, put it in the shoot house. And we don't just have shoot house scenarios only. We developed a bunch of other scenarios too. That some of them are post-apocalyptic style, pretty cool.
Having a little fun.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is we do like for people to have fun at the training. Like, we're not making you run and doing push-ups and sit-ups and jumping jacks and pounding into the ground. This is learning at a learning pace in an easy environment. And then we turn it up a notch with the scenarios. And that's when we really get to test you. So, Justin, we got like 2 minutes left. I'll give you the last 2 minutes, buddy.
All right. So, I mean, I don't know what more to say really about that. I mean, that the bringing the family thing is my biggest thing is, like, if you can train as a family unit and learn this together and take it home and keep training it, you are going to be, was it you or Jamie said a tier one citizen at the end of the last class. And that was, I thought that was awesome because you're ahead of your neighbors. You're ahead of the person by most chances that just broke into your house. The other thing I'll add is we're working on a new website, which should be up hopefully at the end of the week. And you'll be able to get our classes through the website. And so right now we've got on schedule February in Tennessee at, we're going to do this one at Ready Made. Are we doing this? I think we're doing this at Ready Made, and it's going to be Saturday, September 10th through the 11th. It's going to be our first 2-day course. This course is going to be just a lot of reps, hitting a lot of reps, and it's solely focused on the house.
Yeah, and then from there, we got just multiple other training venues. We're not putting anything in stone yet, so what's the next 4 training venues going to be?
So the next 4 training venues, we're going to have March in Tennessee, Thursday, 7th through the 10th. That's also Ready Made. April is going to be in Texas, Friday the 12th through Sunday the 4th or 14th. Sorry, I can't read. And May in Texas, Friday the 24th through Sunday the 26th. So we've got a 2-day, a 4-day, and 2 3-day classes.
For that 4-day class, that's when we get to do like the real big fun multi-environment scenarios. And the last one that we did, we popped like 20 smoke grenades. Yeah. Like, we literally smoked out the Smoky Mountains. So that was super cool. And it was raining and it was cold. I mean, and I was covered in mud because I died every scenario. This is what's great is that we get to put you in an environment where we're not going to be there to help you. So, you know, for all the days that we're training, we're there to help you. And then you get to do it on your own. And then, you know, that's your test and evaluation. And we have an after action afterwards. So it's a lot to offer people, but it's a lot of training. You know, it's not for the faint of heart, but we're, you know, we had a woman, Miss Janine, who's 73, I think, who's been out there three different times. So, I mean, come on, you know, young guys, where you at? You're being outclassed by the older women over here. Listen, people feel the sense and need to train because they see the environment and they see the dangers coming. And anyone else who doesn't see it and they don't get trained, like I said, you don't have to get trained by us. No peer pressure here. You do what you want with your own life. But for men who don't advance themselves in the arena, you're asking for a horrific failure one day. I mean, and there's not much to be said except that you are your own first responder. Cops are always the second guy on scene. So you got to know how to handle yourself, which hopefully 99% of that time, the training that we provide you gives you enough situational awareness to not ever be in that environment and to be able to move out of that environment successfully, right? That's really a priority. But should the worst case scenario happen, you're prepared for it to the best of your ability, right? All right, Justin, that's all we got, dude. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. This is Justin, Uncle Charlie. For those of you who have met Uncle Charlie and you hate his guts because he taunts you and he calls you bad names, please leave a comment in the section, comment section below. Let us know what's the worst thing Uncle Charlie said to you in the shoot house. And from there, guys, come out to the training. Visit VindictiveSolutions.com. Hopefully that website will be up pretty soon. And we can hopefully get people squared away before we can't train no more. We're not going to be able to do this every day. So get trained while you can. Stay frosty, guys. We'll see you next time. God bless. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.